Hey guys, I'm Stevie Nelson.
And I'm Dave Horwitz.
And this is I Burn Everything, a food and relationship podcast.
In the time of social distancing.
Dave, I'm happy to see that you're back in your closet.
Yes, I'm in my closet. It's less haphazard, and I'm happy to say that I look less like I have been kidnapped and thrown in here, and more like I have set it up. If you can see, Stevie, I've got a big comfortable back pillow. I'm sitting on my yoga mat. Everything's great.
It looks nice and cozy and safe in there. I'm really jealous.
Well, you're in your actual home in your office, so I think you're maybe winning this.
Maybe. It's debatable. It's very debatable.
Let's start our episode.
Okay,
we got a wonderful guest. He's a wonderful comedian. He's got an album out called AKA on May 8th. Yep. And I know him from Boston, and let's hope that comes up. It's Mike Kaplan.
Yay, let's do it. Hey, Mike.
Hello. Thank you for doing it, for having me and being here, being there, being. Thank you for being so far away from me, like way more than 6 feet. Thank you for being, taking it really seriously, being like several time zones away.
Yeah.
I'm in the future. And so I'm just here to report that it's the same as it
was. Oh, no.
3 hours.
How far
ago.
In the future? Okay. Okay.
Just 3 hours. Just 3 hours. Okay. So I can't quantum leap fix anything. Here's what I can do for you is I could watch Jeopardy and then send you the answers so you can look like you know them all when it comes on for you.
That's more than I can do for Stevie. So
Yeah, please. I would love that. I don't watch Jeopardy, but I would love to watch it for the first time and have someone think I'm a genius. So I'll FaceTime someone during that time and then answer all the questions, and they'll be like, what the hell?
Oh, yeah. I think that would be even better for this character that you're playing. What is Jeopardy? Like, and they're like, are you making a joke? Because that's literally how Jeopardy works. Like, they say things like, what is Jeopardy? Like, no, what is it though?
What is this show?
You're a natural. Like, I guess, I don't know what, it's just questions. And then
you know
away.
Everything.
Yeah. Oh, it'd be so good. It'd be so, so good.
Can I ask you sincerely a quick question? Is it that you've never watched it, or you just not regularly? Follow up question.
Yeah.
Do you enjoy Celebrity Jeopardy on SNL? And do you think you would enjoy it more if you had seen the original source material? Because it's such a wonderful sketch.
Well, here's the truth. I think I've maybe seen one or two episodes, maybe. How do I put this?
You don't follow it. I get it. You don't know
I'm
the
not
whole
a follower.
Trajectory.
No. So I'm not a follower. And so
you're a leader.
It's a curse of being a leader. It's that you just don't watch much TV. So I don't know. I know what it is, but I don't watch it. I'm sorry.
But for the follow up,
thank
like
you for apologizing.
Oh yeah. I really don't owe me anything Jeopardy wise.
The follow up, I don't watch SNL either.
So you've never seen. I mean, I don't recommend things all the time, but like Celebrity Jeopardy is one of the funniest sketches that SNL has ever done. Now I'm like disclaiming all of it, but anyhow, I mean, you're also welcome to curate your own artistic syllabus. So
yeah.
I'm not. We've just met, and I don't mean to Jeopardy splain to anyone.
No, it's really okay. I do watch Chloe Fineman's Instagram, so sometimes I do see her sketches. But that is all I'm interested in.
Did you grow up with it at all? Because what we're talking about now is these sketches, I think, went from maybe 96 or 97 to maybe like 2000.
Yes, I did watch it as a kid, but I don't particularly remember that part of it, which is weird.
Oh, man.
I know.
I think it's good to not have such a, because there's so many specific opinions that one could have about SNL. The popular standard one is, oh, the best era is the era that from when I was a teenager, because that's when I would stay up late and watch it with my friends and talk about it at school on Monday. And people wonder, like, well, why don't I like it as much anymore? It's like, well, it's not that it's any less good or more or less good or bad. It's that the glimmer in your eyes has left a little bit because you're now an adult.
Yeah.
And teenage years are specifically like when your brain is turning from child to adult, and like even music that you love then, like, or that you listen to then, not even that you love, the music that you knew as a teenager, you know, mm-hmm. decades later, you'll be like, it really catches you more. You could still find beautiful new music as an adult, but the music, even like the music that you're like, yeah, objectively, that isn't like the best music, the most original, whatever it was, but you're like, it holds a special place in your heart because it's your teenage brain's heart that's doing that stuff. It's like what you said, Dave, it makes complete sense. It's like, oh, like the moment, being in the moment, like, why isn't that moment as good as this moment, or why isn't this moment, like,
yes,
so it makes sense. I'm sure that you had your own childhood teenage experiences that stuck with you and got into your brain, whatever they are, music, comedy, dance, theater, otherwise, like, here you are creating art. You must have consumed art. So whatever that was, I'm glad that you had it.
Thank you for that. I would go into all the art that I have consumed, but the truth is I'm more interested in you.
Oh, right. That's I've not listened to all of your episodes, but I just assume that I come on and ask you questions about your teenage years. It's
This is the mark of a true podcaster.
Yeah. It really is. Someone who's just like, you know what? I want to ask you a question. I'm like, no. I want to ask you a question.
Do you know what's funny is I have a podcast of my own, and
yes,
I have been on the other side of this experience where somebody comes on and then I say something in passing, a topic arises, and then they're like, wait a second, what about you? And you're like, as the podcaster, you're like, well, I've actually probably talked about that 1 billion times, you know, like in my life on my podcast. And I'm like, I don't want to be rude to we're having a conversation. Like, so thank you for indulging. I didn't want to say endure. I'm like, enduring. Thank you for enduring and or indulging me in this time. But please, I must insist, this is your home. This is your show. Please ask me questions that you want to ask me.
I do have questions. I do have questions. And then I just like, it's just silent for the rest of the episode. Well, okay. My first question, first of all, how has social isolation been going for you in New York?
What do you mean social isolation? I haven't been paying attention to the news. Uh-oh, or anything.
Dave.
That's a fun.
I just moved into a commune last week. There's a lot of people. It's very fun. We're very open-minded. There's a lot of touching. Why? And we have no
What's
Wi-Fi
up?
Here.
Yeah, big huggers. So I live in Brooklyn with my girlfriend. We have a one bedroom. So she's in the bedroom now with the door closed and possibly with noise canceling headphones, because I have a voice that she has shared with me sometimes after I do a show, a podcast, a streaming event during this time. One time she had a headache and told me, she's like, your voice is a very good voice for the job that you do, which is, you know, projecting it into the world through. And this might sound like passive aggressive, but she is the sweetest person and she's being completely sincere. She loves me. She loves my voice. She loves the things that I say. In fact, that's one of the reasons that she was attracted to me, is because of the things that I said with my voice. And now, ironically, here we find ourselves with me, especially right now, when I usually leave the home to go talk and do my job or do podcasts in other places. But right now it's all happening here. Right now I have this album coming out, so I'm perhaps doing even more reaching out, more communing, more electronic things than I would be. I'm in a way oddly busier during this time, which is kind of a nice thing. The same way that comedy, I think sometimes people go to comedy, they go to it or bring it to them for one of potentially two reasons or a spectrum or a range. But one is to engage with what's going on, like political comedy, seeking truth to power. Another is to possibly escape. Perhaps you're on the front lines of the medical profession, like all day long. You want to come home and just like zone out and get out of there. And so there's some combination. Like right now, I'm excited to be both escaping and engaging. Like what I'm like, ooh, I'm doing a fun thing. I'm communing with an old friend, a new friend, new potential people listening to my voice, hearing my thoughts out there. Thank you for listening. Thank you for enjoying, or at least for engaging. Thank you for choosing to have my voice in your head right now. And also the very question of how I am off these days, it just takes so much longer to go through the nuances of like, what I'm up to most these days when people say like, what are you up to in these times? I'm like, I guess I spend most of my time answering the question, what are you up to? Or how are you? I spend a lot of time, and part of the way that I am whenever somebody asks the question is grateful that I am communing with a person who is asking that question, even if they just want me to say fine and move on, even if they have a lot more questions planned, even if they didn't think that every question that they asked would lead to this quantity. I guess what I mean is quantity of answer. This level, but I am mostly in my home with my girlfriend. Sometimes she's
who
doing a lot of
you're
reading and
too
knitting.
Loud.
Oh,
you're
yeah,
quiet.
Oh, yeah, I mean,
your quiet girlfriend who thinks you're too loud.
I think she doesn't think. I don't want to argue with you here in your home. But I do understand why that could be the takeaway. I want to say it's not that she thinks I'm too loud. It's that she thinks I am loud. I am myself, am the in some ways the right amount of loud. And it's also I'm not just one level all of the time. In fact, I've done one after that. The next show that I had, I moved close to the microphone, moved close to the phone, moved. And
love
then I was
it.
Like, how about an ASMR show right now? How about one that'll just be soothing right in people's ears? And also, it'll leave the ears free and clear that are in the home nearby. Sometimes she loves listening to me as well. She doesn't always have a headache, but she is more often quieter than I. So we have been doing a lot of our own things and then, being more purposeful and mindful about the activities that we engage in together. Reading things, watching things, going through our books, going through clothing, cooking, been cooking more.
Oh, good.
Yeah, so a lot happening in a little space. Yeah.
Yeah, I love that.
Cooking.
Like,
oh, is that oh, okay.
Yeah, I was gonna say, so you guys have been cooking together. I read that you're vegan, yeah?
Is that I am.
True? Okay, so
it is.
What if it wasn't? Is it hard? I was thinking about this with people with like not extreme diets, but like diets of like vegan or keto or food allergies. Was it hard for you, or is it hard for you to find groceries right now? Like, are there exceptions that you're making because of it?
What a thoughtful question. I really like being assessed the analysis of an extreme diet, like the idea that as a vegan, I am, that sounds aggressive and strong. And it's a nice, I like that. I like that stereotype. Just let's
it's like a Mountain
going.
Dew commercial.
Yeah. That's the vibe we're going for with it.
To answer your question, one in a slightly roundabout, but I'll get to it as quickly and efficiently as I can. We've been going through our books. We have a massive amount of books. We're like, which ones do we want to read? Which ones are we really planning to read? And so we have a stack of ones that we're like, this one I want to read it, but I think I'm not going to for real. So let's get rid of these so we can focus on the ones we want. One of the books I'm getting rid of that I haven't read, but I've read a little bit about, like the back of and articles about, is called The Art of Choosing. And my understanding is that too many choices are can actually be more harmful, you know, like the mo money, mo problems of choices.
It's called The Paradox of Choice.
And so it is like, as a vegan, like when I've gone to restaurants, if it's a non-vegan restaurant, like sometimes I go to a vegan restaurant, I want to order, if I'm in a town I've never been to and I'm never going back to like for a while, I'll be like, I want to order everything on the menu. But if I go to a non-vegan restaurant where they have only a few, like three or four options, I think is the sweet spot for, you know, human comfort, human, like, ooh, I have a choice, but not too much that it's overwhelming. So it's, in fact, I have not, I'm glad that the supply chains of food, the food supply chains have not broken down as far as I know. I've gone shopping probably like four times in, you know, the past 40 days or whatever it is. And it's, I go to the food co-op that's like just around the corner from my home. And then one sort of like 24-hour store that has some vegetables and much shorter lines to get into also. And they have had all of, if not all of the food every time, like the produce aisle doesn't, like sometimes they're out of Brussels sprouts, sometimes they're out of squash, but then they have other things. And so I personally am glad to have, you know, the constraint. Sometimes, you know, in art, a constraint helps you write. If they're like, write about anything, like, well, what about write about this thing, right? Yeah. Write these monologue jokes, write about this topic, write a sketch or a movie or a book, or be like, oh, focused about whatever it is, social justice, yourself, your personal life, pop culture, a specific thing. And so having like my vegan diet was, I didn't get it to be just good for having fewer choices. It was based more in the concern for animal welfare. But one benefit of that additionally on top is that I'm like, oh, I just go to this aisle. I look for these things and I take what is there, what is present, what is healthy, what is enjoyable. And so, yeah, in this time, I've actually perhaps had an easier time of shopping, where when I go to the co-op, they sometimes say, when we, like, the people, they're like, have an idea of what you're going to get. Don't just like shop around, because it's a limited, you know, they only let 35 people in at once. And so it reminds me of like Thanksgiving as a child, before I was vegetarian. My father is married to an Italian woman. They cooked, you know, all the Thanksgiving things, and also a bunch of Italian things like that aren't, you know, classically necessarily thought of as Thanksgiving food. And I would just stuff myself and be hurt. And then eventually, when I was vegetarian and eventually vegan, I was like, oh, this is way easier. Like, I don't understand how everybody else who can eat everything, like for even just on a practical level, like not even thinking about the animal welfare, which I encourage people to think about, but even just think about your own welfare. I think about my own welfare. I hurt myself when I wasn't vegan.
How long have you been vegan?
Vegan about 18 years.
Whoa.
How long did you do it for, Stevie?
Three.
That's close.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's very close.
It's not a competition.
No, but I am so close to you. It is not funny.
I mean, you should try to. I mean, if you want, you don't have to, but you can. You don't have to watch Jeopardy. You don't have to catch up to me. But, you know, you're it's definitely a real tortoise hair situation. I don't know which one, either one. I guess I'm the hair, because I'm both of them, because I'm eating like vegetables and they probably eat some grass and lettuce and stuff.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I don't know. You just I don't know. You're not even in the race.
No, I bowed out of the race.
I'm wondering, Stevie, if you ask that question, because I feel like Mike, and this is, it could be an LA thing. It could be if there was a co-op or a CSA box in my life, there'd be something that maybe that would be, it would be a different story for me. But I have found, and obviously I try to eat and have been eating less animal products this time, especially dairy. But some of the things that have been hardest for me to find, at least consistently, have been what I think would be staples, or what I understand to be staples of a vegan diet. For example, lentils, beans, rice. Has that been an issue for you at all? Have you needed to say like, okay, this week we'll have less of the, you know, vegan chili recipe we were going to make, or something like that? Or has it just been like, I guess educate me on the life of someone who goes to a Brooklyn co-op, because it sounds a lot better than me fist fighting my way through the Los Feliz Albertsons.
Sure. I mean, one thing is, we did legitimately just moved into this apartment that has a larger kitchen than our last one a few months, like in October, a few months ago. And we're like, part of it, the apartment's slightly more expensive, but like, we'll cook a little more and that'll help us save money on how much we were not cooking before. eating from elsewhere. And we only now really kicked into high gear, like learning how to, or realizing that we knew all along the recipes for roasting vegetables like broccoli, cauliflower. We've got some sweet potatoes. We're thinking about some carrots. We've got Brussels sprouts. Like, those are the main roastings that we have going on. And then a lot of the rest of it, of our diet, we do have some like frozen meals. There's like these, my girlfriend is gluten-free in addition to vegan. So we have these vegan gluten-free burritos. Ooh, there's a cute dog in the picture now. I'm sorry if you're just listening and don't see a cute dog, but I see it and it's licking the microphone. It's adorable. So we've got these like sort of Amy's, I think, meals that are like, some of them are like, it's very easy to be, you know, especially compared to, you know, it might be $4 for this frozen dinner that is easy to cook in the microwave, that compared to, you know, going out to a restaurant that costs more. But we've also got these cans of soup, like a bunch of lentil soup, a bunch of, I mean, hummus. So as far as like, you know, we've got your lentils, your chickpeas, your various, we've got some tofus in there. And so it's actually, I mean, you could do this at Trader Joe's. You could do this probably at any supermarket. I'm not here to advocate for any one over another. I do recommend the Park Slope Food Co-op. You probably can't become a member right now from where you are. But I'm certainly not the cooking est. I cook now more than I ever have in my life. But I've gone from like zero to 30, you know, whatever a comfortable stroll along is. But it's mostly just getting vegetables that we like and putting them in olive oil and spike seasoning and salt and pepper, and then putting them in and being like, wow, the broccoli really like, it roasts. It's got like that. It's the broccoli's hair gets so crispy and crunchy. And like, I can't take credit for it. I'm just like, you know, rolling it around in a bowl with these ingredients that I'm like, are there rules? I'm like, you know, I was good at math in school. I'm like, oh, do these equations exactly like this. And it seems like there's some recipes that are like, oh yeah, put this exactly here and do exactly this. But this week, my girlfriend was kind of just like, just, you know, like, use a little bit of it, like, you know, feel it out, try it away. And I was like, just try it, just don't. And she's like, what do you do with comedy? You just got on stage and started trying things and then you figured out what worked for you. And I was like, yeah, I guess I could do exactly what I do for my career in my home while cooking as well. And so now I'm like, oh yeah, I do this, I put it on this tray, I put it in there, and then I also eat soup and frozen burritos.
Well, when you say 0 to 30, I mean, it is, look, I relate. I feel like I went from 10 or 20 to 70, mm-hmm. which is on, again, not much difference. It is interesting how daunting it can feel, and then you're just like, I think what you said is funny, of, oh, because literally, especially roasting, because I've been doing a little bit more, especially roasting vegetables, just like sheet pan meals that are, I had no, oh, you can cook potatoes and Brussels sprouts and asparagus at the same temperature at the same time in the same pan, and well, but the way you prep it must be really hard. No, you toss it with some spices and some salt and pepper and some olive oil, and you're like, oh, okay, well, I guess I've had truly no excuse for my whole life for not doing this.
And it resonates. I'm like, I feel like you just said to me that what I said resonated, and I was about to be like, what you say with really resonates with me. And it's just like, you know, an echo chamber going back and forth. But like, I feel like skiing is something that I did for a little while when I was like a teenager, maybe a young 20 something. And I loved doing it, but it always seemed like such a to-do to get to where the fun was happening. Like,
yeah,
you had to, you know, bring all the gear to a place, travel. Like, it seemed like, and even swimming was like that. Like, I love swimming, but it's like, oh, you gotta then shower after. I'm like, I don't know. Like, any one of the things that you're like, what is the thing that you actually don't want to do? You're like, I like driving in a car. You can listen to music. You can talk to your friends. Like, I like showering. That feels good to get clean after you've had an experience. Like, the... Now, and so I feel like the same way I'm able to, it really for me, only seems like it would be like cooking was this daunting thing. Like, I'm not good at it. I don't know how to do it. And then even if I know how to do it, do I want to? It takes time. I could be doing other things with my time. The same way before I started meditating, I was like, why would I want to just sit? Why would I want to be, why would I want to take like a brief Sabbath each morning to think about, you know, to, like not even think about, just to, before I plunge into the depths of social media, the news, like before I'm like, what if I don't finish all the garbage TV that I want to watch? What then? Okay. Meditation. And so cooking now has become this kind of, you know, like meditative experiment where I'm like, I enjoy doing it partially because of the result. The same way that when I became vegetarian and started eating healthier, I think the food started tasting better. I at least started enjoying it more. I'm like, ooh, clearly if somebody came out tomorrow and said, hey, broccoli, we found out it's poison. All the broccoli is poison. I'd be like, well, I liked eating it. I'll be done eating it. If somebody did that for peanut butter or like a sweet treat that I love, I'd be like, oh, that's like maybe more of a loss. But
now we got a problem.
It's psychologically shifted. Like eating healthily, eating the vegetables that, you know, help sustain, you know, my living in a way that makes me feel good. Like, it feels good to be doing the thing that I know is good for my body, as far as I know. And so cooking is like that. Additionally, it's like I'm doing it if I'm cooking for my girlfriend, which is nice. Or even if it was just me, I feel like I'd be like, oh, this is great. Like I feel I'm self-sufficient. Like I don't have a lot of things where, like, one time this masculine comedy club owner asked me, he's like, what's the manliest thing that you do? And I was like, answer question. Like, I didn't understand, like, I was like, do men talk like this? I'm like, I am one, but what's happening? And I feel like, so I think the concept of like being a man in the way that a lot of people, you know, intend it isn't what I want to say, but I feel like I'm literally self-actualizing. Like, I'm being myself. I'm and a better version of myself by knowing how to cook, by cooking for myself, by creating the food that helps, like, the food becomes me, literally actualizing myself. If I don't eat food, then there is no actual self. The self will go away because you literally are what you eat. You become the food. The food becomes you. So I feel like it really is this almost like a combination spiritual grounding thing where I'm like, while I'm doing it, none of it feels bad. Like, I imagine, like, none of it is the scary thing that it seemed like it was going to be before you know how to do anything. You're like, I don't know. I fear change because change represents death, and I don't know what the ultimate unknown is. And so but what am I worried about here? I'm like, oh no, I'm afraid who's going to die? The version of me that didn't know how to cook, the version of me that didn't know how to care for myself as well. You know who's dying is the version of me who doesn't know how to fully help myself live. I'm like, isn't it better for that person to die and then be reborn as this person who roasts vegetables once in a while?
Oh yeah, at the very worst, at the beginning, the only thing in jeopardy of dying is like a pan of charred broccoli that cooked a little bit too long, and then the next batch is going to be good. But I do think it can feel daunting and intimidating, and I also think that I kind of have the same relationship that you had at the beginning to cooking, to meditation, and I've like dipped my toe in, and it's honestly it's very it was like immediately nice, and yet it's like for me it's been like sticking my foot into like the most beautiful heated pool and then going like, but I don't know about this. Like, this is as about as good as it could be, and yet I don't know if I want to give myself over to mindfulness right now, even though this is the time when I probably need it the most. I know, Stevie, you do it daily. How long have you been doing it, Mike? Is this a quarantine thing, or is this a several years thing, or what?
Good question. First, I like the idea, like, I'll be in the moment later. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know if being mindful right now is where I'm at in my schedule. You know, that thing, there's like a fun meditation joke where they say, and it's also, in a way, yeah, it's sort of like a Zen koan, I guess, more. I was going to say, is it the truth? Where they say, If you have time, meditate 10 minutes a day. And if you don't have time, meditate an hour a day. So I started meditating, I would say probably around 2014, if I had to pick, which I don't have to, but I choose to. I'd say give or take a year. I was either like 2013, 2014. I'd heard about it. I'd, you know, read about it, like articles, and I think the preponderance of evidence, both from like science, like the data that suggests, like, even there's a, can I tell you a story about, I don't know if this is a true story, but I heard a story about Niels Bohr, the physicist, once that Einstein came and visited him and saw that he had a horseshoe over his door. And he was like, Do you believe in luck and superstition, Niels Bohr? You're a scientist. And Niels Bohr says in the story, he says, well, I don't believe in it, but they say that it works even if you don't believe in it. And and then I heard a thing that Neil deGrasse Tyson said once, which was about science and about how science works even if you don't believe in it. Like, you know, the physical world does do things, like whether or not if you close your eyes and you're like, I don't think that the Earth is going to rotate the way that it did yesterday, probably you're not right. And so with respect to that, I feel like meditation, everything that I learned about it from like comedians who I knew who were doing it and sort of, they weren't like raving about it, you know, the meditative equivalent of being like, I like it and it could probably work for you as well, because it probably could be a thing that everyone could look into. And I was like, I don't know. And so I was resistant like you, but then just listening to like TED Talks and like segments on NPR and just reading all these things, that it was like the confluence of the scientific evidence, the scientific community, and also like the woo-woo community, that I felt like more aligned with, let's say, the sciencey crowd than the woo-woo-y crowd at the time. But I was like, well, if science and magic agree, like, who am I, you know, if they're both like, believe and not do it because we say to, and not that believe and it will make it magically true, but like, try this thing and see if it works for yourself within yourself. And if, hey, like, you're in charge, like, you don't have to if you don't want to, but if you do it, like, what if I find it valuable and then I want to keep doing it? Good. Then if you don't, like, what if the pool's so warm that I just want to live in that pool forever and I never come out? That's not how it works. Don't worry about it. Like, think about that. Like, what if I get too enlightened that I stop living my life? Don't worry, your head will go towards the clouds, but your feet will be able to remain on the ground. And so my body will stretch. No, just do it if you want to, or don't leave me alone, you know, and leave me alone in the all oneness that we all are. So yeah, I started doing it with Headspace, the app, and then I tried a couple other, like Insight Timer. And now I've been using Sam Harris's Waking Up app, I think it's called, mostly with apps, sometimes at classes or in groups. A friend of mine, a few different friends lead sort of like breath work and yoga and or, you know, sound healing kinds of meditation sessions. So I've tried a lot of things and have found them all valuable in different ways.
That's fantastic. Yeah, we both use Insight Timer. And also, just something I found out for our LA listeners, apparently for LA residents, Headspace is free all the month of May,
yeah,
which is great.
It's amazing. What
so
a
get
cool
into it.
Gift to give all LA residents.
Hey guys, Stevie here. Just wanted to say, hey, why don't you contact us? You can email us at iburneverythingpod@gmail.com, or you can even call our hotline and leave a message, 213-458-5236. It's 213-458-5236, and we may even talk about your message or email on a future episode. So get to it.
I love that you meditate. I think that's cool. I also understand why people, I've talked to a lot of people about meditation. I do transcendental meditation, and I talked to a lot of people about it, and I understand the fear around not wanting to meditate. I think there is a real, before I started meditating, which is probably like at this point 15 years ago now, I was afraid that if I meditated, it would take away like my edge, like the thing that makes you funny, or the thing, because it seems like probably I had some sort of belief that if you were like a little unhinged, it's what made you interesting or funny. And it's so interesting that that was my fear, because it hasn't changed that part. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, I don't unleash on people by any means, but it's like, it doesn't make you un anything. It just makes you more yourself.
For sure. If I may do a brief scene, this is a caricature of a you-like character and a me-like character. You yep. say 15 years ago, I'll play both parts for now for a moment, if you don't mind.
Yes, please do.
So this is you say the you character says, 15 years ago, I was worried that like if I started meditating, I would just become unfunny. And I'm like, oh God, did it happen?
It did.
Are you still?
No, yeah. It did happen. And now I only do serious, sincere podcasts now, and nothing. I don't make a joke.
I mean, well, I think it's a valuable service as well. Here's the thing: is if I did become not funny from meditating, it would be in part. It would come along with not caring that, like, the part of you that worries, like, what if something changes and I'm not. And I don't. And what if I worry less? And what if it's my worry that, if not, makes me keeps me alive? And while we're alive, don't worry. I think you're don't worry about stopping worrying. Or if you like, because you're already there. You're already worried.
I mean, yeah. I think someone could in this time. And it's an untested theory, but I think that a person could get as close to actual enlightenment and or just pure nirvana as possible. And because of the crushing weight of what's happening in the world right now, you still wouldn't be fully there. You'd still be like blissed out for most of your day and mindful and at peace. And then you'd just be like, oh God, what's the death toll today? Shit.
And
how many ventilators do we not have? Fuck.
I would add to that. I think that's 100%. And more, so a larger number than 100%. My understanding of, at least, let's say, from a Buddhist framework, from some things that I've read and learned in classes, that the function of enlightenment or the goal of enlightenment is like not solely personal. In fact, that's almost impossible. It's to become enlightened is to desire and then help along everyone else on that trajectory, on that path of their own internal growth and hopeful enlightenment, and to, you know, to help ease all the suffering of the world, to help every, if you got to a place where you're like, oh yeah, no worries. Like, it's not even, that's not like, I feel like that's a stereotype, a caricature that, that makes sense from the perspective that we either have now or have had at times, that the person just sitting on top of the mountain with no cares in the world, just waiting for people to climb and ask them questions, not, you know, helping donate money or feed the hungry or, you know, get, you know, flatten the curve in the, like, they're certainly flattening the curve if they're all the way up there, much farther than 6 feet away, but they're like, yep, that's the thing to do. Yeah. Somebody comes up, what do I do to help in this time? Oh, you shouldn't have come here. You should ask that question from further down the mountain into your
own
self.
Should have emailed the question.
Yeah. We've got Wi-Fi up here on this mount, but yeah, that part of the goal of, you know, of helping oneself along one's own path is to then, when, you know, when your oxygen mask is on as much as it can be, help other people get those oxygen masks on, which is all, I never thought about this, sort of the connection of breathing as, like, you know, the object of meditation and for a lot of people in a lot of ways, that breathing is something that we do involuntarily, automatically. And then in meditation, sometimes our attention is drawn to it, be like, focus on the breath so that is, you're more aware of it. Bring your awareness to your breath. And then if it goes away, you're like, oh, let's get back to the breath. And a friend of mine, Corey Allen, has a podcast, The Astral Hustle, posted recently. He said something like, letting go is something that is like exhaling. Like, you're never done. You're never like, okay, so I exhaled and that's enough of that. It's like, it's as long as you're taking things in, whether it's air information, life. Like it involves like a constant process. You know, you have to, okay, I ate. Well, okay, then you undid eating, and then you have to eat again. If you want to keep living, you get to keep putting food and air and water and experiences into your body, breathing them in and then breathing them out, whether literally or metaphorically. So I like the idea of the oxygen mask is something that you put on yourself, and then also you have to keep, in a way, you know, breathing.
How does that I love that. How does that relate to relationships for you?
Great question. I think that in a lot of ways, like this breathing metaphor is valuable to me. Like in my comedy, I'll step stone to relationship after one thing. In the before times, under quote unquote ordinary circumstances, I would travel about half the time for my comedy work, be at home about half the time. And I would value both of those things as I value inhaling and exhaling. Like I love traveling to a new place. I love returning to my same place. Like there's a quote I love from a poet, Robert Haas, I believe, or Haas. I've only seen it written. He says, repetition makes us feel secure and variation makes us feel free. And freedom and security are these two beautiful yin yangs aspects of like valuable things. Like, you know, if you have too much the same thing, maybe you'll get bored. If you have too many different things, maybe you won't feel grounded or centered. So you need some combination, some equilibrium or balance of both. With my girlfriend, for example, we each have our own sort of, you know, our mutual like hangout libido, our introversion, extroversion spectrum that we're each on. We each have our own, you know, needs and wants. And so I think that we, you know, in this relationship, we both, it's important for each person, and perhaps this is true beyond this as well, but I can only speak for myself and my girlfriend. I have been deputized and authorized to speak on her behalf.
That's cool. Can you send us, if you would like, please send us that, the document she signed.
The document?
Saying that.
Oh, yeah, of course. Okay. She is, obviously. I have it right here. Great. Okay, certainly. Great. I didn't just write this up myself.
It's a forgery.
She's authorized me to forge things. Absolutely.
I'm sorry. I'm sending the cops to your house. And
oh, that's just tell them to keep 6 feet away. And that's
a problem.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
So I do think that we, you know, we communicate first, hopefully with ourselves, with, you know, within ourselves to be like, what are my wants and needs on, you know, on a large scale in the relationship or on a small scale day to day. And then we communicate those wants and needs, those desires, those like where we are and who we are, like with each other, to each other. And so I think that like similarly, similar to the breathing in and out, important to inhale and exhale. In a relationship, let's say in a monogamous relationship, which I am in a monogamous relationship now. So it's certainly math-wise works. There's her and me, and there's like my own time, and then there's our time. And for her, there's her time, and there's our time. And like with breathing in and out, it's important to be aware of, be mindful of, be conscious of what the ideal balance is, both a combination of internally and within ourselves and between ourselves. So it's nice to like breathe in the relationship, or it's nice to breathe in our alone time and breathe out the metaphor has stopped working, but there'll be another one any day now. But I do think that is something that I have like gleaned and get to like continuing to breathe, continue to learn and assess and be present and know that if, you know, at a time, like we, with the same way that we check our own bodies, hopefully to know, like, if I am in a mood of a kind that isn't my favorite mood, like a question could be that I ask myself, or sometimes that my girlfriend asks myself, she's like, have you eaten recently? Have you eaten today? Because if I haven't eaten in some amount of time, I might be crankier and not know that that is what's happening or that is why. And I might, my initial defensive reaction might be like, maybe, but that's not what this is about. And then I'll eat and I'll be like, it's a little bit about what it was about. And so similarly, the way that we can, you know, it could be with sleep as well. If we haven't had enough sleep, if we haven't had enough food or for my girlfriend, alone time, you know, time, just, you know, the various ways to care for ourselves. It's good to do that internally within ourselves. And it's also good to do that within the relationship. And if there's a time when it seems like we are, you know, facing a challenge, if we're not in complete harmonious alignment of wants and needs, like, I mean, sometimes she's asleep and I'm awake, sometimes I'm awake and she's asleep, sometimes maybe that was the same one both, but it's always that way. It's never, I think I said it, I think I switched them both. But I'm always awake and she's always asleep, I guess. She's Sleeping Beauty, and awesome. I'm just
that's my dream relationship.
Dance with Mary Jane. It's the Tom Petty's Last Dance with Mary Jane video where he's dancing with a corpse the entire time.
Yeah, that's my dream. Just like a silent boyfriend who's always asleep. Oh, count me in.
And you can just take pictures of it. But actually, yeah. I wouldn't mind a constantly sleeping girlfriend, but I would need her to wake up sometimes so I could be kind of next to her face when she wakes up and they go, "You are sleeping," or "You looked so peaceful." I want to be that. I want to be the creepy boyfriend so bad. I think I'm doing my girlfriend a disservice by being like kind of normal.
Me too. I think you need to wake someone up. Yeah, you need to wake someone up definitely by being like, "You look so cute when you sleep like that. You should have seen the face you were making."
my girlfriend does that to me more. I would say I normally wake up before her, but last night she went to sleep a few hours earlier than I did, and so I was up late and slept a couple hours later than her, and she takes longer than I do normally to, in the morning, like, become herself again, you know, like, come back to waking life, as it were. Mm-hmm. But so today she had done that, and I woke up, and I was like, and, you know, sort of creaky, like a haunted house door puppy, just kind of, like, crawling over, and she was like, "Oh, this is, you know," and she like takes pictures of like my feet while I sleep sometimes if they are in a cute configuration. And it's, yeah. So I think it's important to know that, you know, you're not always going to be on the exact same page, but, you know, I can always breathe on my own. I can always, you know, if she needs time for herself and I'm like, I can be by myself, I can meditate, I can read a book, I can make music, I can call a friend, I can go for a walk, I can make tea, I can stop talking and rest.
Well, I think you know, we've been talking to a handful of people who are quarantining with people, and it runs the gamut from, "Oh, we just moved in together, we moved in because of this, we've been together for a while, and so it's kind of organically happening," just the whole spectrum. And it sounds like through not divine intervention, but through you know, real effort. I mean, I think we haven't had anyone on who is, you know, young 20s living with someone, because I'm sure that there's going to be some hardships there. But I think the more you get under your belt, like, I think I would be much more equipped. I'm not quarantining with my girlfriend, but I think if I was, I would be, this version of me is, and this is the version who is not afraid of cooking, who's not afraid of communicating, who, you know, who doesn't shut down if there's an argument. Like, I think who's not opposed to meditation. I think that this time is like really testing people's metal in that way, inside and outside of a relationship too. So I don't know. I've yet to hear somebody during this little mini series we're doing and been like, "Oh, yikes, good luck." But it definitely seems like you guys know what you're doing and are equipped to deal with it. We are gonna wrap up, but I have been asking every single one of our guests the same question, and it's mostly selfish because I need these things, but I think our audience also does too. Do you have a streaming recommendation? Now, this could be something you would even have. Let's extend it to, you might have to buy it on iTunes, but, you know, reality TV is fine. Scripted TV is fine. I've been watching all the scummiest 70s detective movies, Gene Hackman in Night Moves, Elliot Gould in The Long Goodbye, etc. Do you have anything for us in across any category?
I do, and can I first respond briefly, as briefly as I can, to the last thing that you said as well about relationships? Is that May I do that?
Of course.
Yes.
First, I'd say, yikes, oh boy, good luck, everyone. I know you said nobody's ever said that, but I wanted to be the first. a thing that's been valuable for me in my relationship, for us, is to hopefully always strive to remember that we have the best of intentions for each other and for ourselves and for the relationship, that like if one of us is, you know, not underslept or has not eaten or whatever the case is, like zooming out, we can intellectually know at least like I want her to be happy. She wants me to be happy. We want each other to be fulfilled. We want to help each other, you know, have an enjoyable, productive, restful, like flourishing an experience as possible. And that, so if anyone's out there in a relationship and hopefully that can be true, at least in the abstract, like on the day to day, you know, on the flip side of that is in these times in particular that like there's a great stressor, you know, from the outside. So if that leads to stress on the inside, that's very reasonable. And so the idea of like, maybe people are leading, maybe it's bringing more out of people. Maybe it's bringing, you know, more like of all things, of more compassion, more understanding, or more stress, more anxiety, maybe more fighting. Like, and all of those things are very like natural. Like if you're out in the rain, you're going to get wet no matter what your attitude is. And like, there's a brief analogy. This is, I don't need to promise, but I do think this one is brief. And then the streaming recommendation I have right away. Just stream your own consciousness. That's all I recommend. I have one for real. But it's actually kind of related to that. But the analogy is there. I've heard this thing said that in a long distance relationship, in a relationship, distance is like the wind. If the relationship is a flame, that it will fan a great forest fire, like wind will spread a big fire, but wind will extinguish a candle. So like, distance will do that to a relationship. People are like, oh, distance, you know, it'll never work. But sometimes it does if the people, you know, if it's the right people at the right time, like, you know, behaving and acting and thinking and conceiving of it as mindfully and possible in as possible in the right way. And similar to that, I think proximity, like when people are the opposite of distanced, when they are together unavoidably in times like this, I think for us, I feel like it's the same thing. Like we've been living together for several years. We've been able to leave the house in the past. Now we're not as much, but it's hopefully bringing us closer together, that it's fanning the flame as opposed to extinguishing it. And so hopefully that can be helpful to other people as well. And
I would hope so. It certainly makes sense.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's just been something that has helped me to conceive of. And I hope that, you know, whatever your situation is out there, that you are either thriving in it or forgiving yourself and accepting and not beating yourself up for not thriving, because it's very reasonable to feel non-thrivey these days.
I'm that one. Being very forgiving, interspersed with being real tough on myself. But it always ends with, hey, man, it really seems like you're trying. Oh, thanks. Yeah, I am. Okay, good. Well, that's all you can do for today. So you've earned sitting in bed and watching a movie until your eyes glaze over and you fall asleep.
Oh, yeah.
So speaking of,
recommendation is a fairly new Netflix edition, the animated show Midnight Gospel. Gospel is it's my favorite thing that I've watched recently. I just watched it, and I'm going to watch it all the way again through with my girlfriend. It's based on Duncan Trussell's podcast conversations that he has with these great, you know, meditative thinkers, sometimes spiritual guides, people who are talking about death and life and drugs and love and loss and connection, and all on sort of the backdrop of these like psychedelic-ish, you know, like extra, you know, other dimensional traveling beings. Like, you know, it's again like sort of the thing that I love of a fusion of just like the most out there and the most in here.
Absolutely. Yeah. I recently watched the first episode, which is it's a conversation between Duncan Trussell and Dr. Drew, surprisingly. And they're talking about psychedelics and the legalization of drugs and everything. And it's set against the backdrop of it's Pendleton Ward, who created Adventure Time. Some of the most wild, creative, insane animation you've ever seen, maybe haven't seen since like Ralph Bakshi and Don Bluth in the 70s and 80s. I mean, I'm a huge, it's basically like hits all my sweet spots of like people smarter than me talking about something I'm interested in and visuals that are like melting my face. So that's an extremely great recommendation. I would say, where can people find you? But quickly, tell us a little bit about your album and where they might find that.
Sure. The album is called AKA. It is originally the title was going to be All Killing Aside. That's what I was touring the hour as, All Killing Aside, because it was focusing on themes of love and compassion and not murdering. Those were the main themes that I would say.
Three great tenets.
Oh, yeah. In these, you know, we don't need 10 commandments, just these couple. It's really, you could get down to just love and not murdering, just love, really. But because of the timing of the release, mid-pandemic, I talked to my producer and my mother, and my mother was like, maybe don't have killing in the title. Maybe have a call it All Kidding Aside. And I was like, okay, that's cool. Put that into consideration. And so we called it AKA, short for All Killing Aside, All Kidding Aside for my mother. And also, it's also known as. So the the original title is also known as AKA. And my name is also an AKA of sorts. Mike Kaplan spelled the way I do. I was given the name Michael Adam Kaplan, M-A-K, at birth. And this is almost the end of my Ask Me Anything. This is my AKA, M-A-K, A-M-A about my album that I think is A-OK that comes out on the 8th of May. It is available for pre-order currently. Right. Currently,
yeah.
on today as we record on May Day. I'm sorry if you don't want people to know when we record, but yeah, it's all the places that, you know, albums could be found, physical copies and otherwise, available at Blonde Medicine, the record label.com, blondemedicine.com/AKA. It's also, you could download it on iTunes or stream it at Apple Music or stream it wherever you want. And I appreciate you engaging with it. It is available for pre-order and a few tracks are available now. And then May 8th, everywhere into your brain.
Go get AKA and follow Mike on Twitter. He's very funny. Mike, thank you so much for doing our show.
Thank you, Mike.
It's good to see you again. I don't think I've seen you since Sean Perlman and I did your podcast in Los Angeles, which I believe was at this point 5 years ago, 6 years ago. So
my goodness. And also, because you wanted to talk about it, we both knew each other in Boston. Thank you so much for having me. And it's been a great pleasure. It's nice to see you and hear you.
Same over here. Stay safe, stay sane. Keep roasting them veggies and roasting those hecklers on stage. Ooh, we're not going to edit that out, but just know in my heart, I would like to.
We will mentally delete it.
Bye, Mike. Stevie, that was pretty cool, huh?
That was so cool. That guy is so smart.
I know. He is so quick. It's funny, you know, we haven't. I did his podcast a couple years ago with my old podcast partner, Sean Perlman, and it was super fun. But before that, I hadn't seen him in a very long time.
Yeah.
And when we were both bumping around or knocking around Boston and doing stand up at this very, very small comedy club above a Chinese restaurant called the Comedy Studio, which has the same backdrop and sign I think it's had since 1999, maybe, who knows. But he was just so... He's just always been so sharp, and I knew he was going to have kind of an interesting and unique perspective on everything that's going on right now, and especially as it pertains to his life. But I was very impressed.
Me too. So impressed. So quick. It was cool to learn about him.
I hope everybody checks out his album, which at the time of release will be, I think, officially out.
Yeah.
So go get it. And tell them Dave and Stevie sent you, although there's probably no one to tell because you're probably just going to get it on iTunes or something.
Maybe shout it out loud as you're buying it. Dave and Stevie sent me.
Dave and Stevie sent me. And then the neighbors are like banging on the wall like, shut the fuck up.
You're a fucking asshole.
Every day I got to listen to you singing in your room by yourself, recording your podcast in your closet. Just shut up. I can hear every word. Okay, Jesus.
Jesus.
Okay, I get it. What are we, 60 full days into this and we're getting impatient? I get it.
Yeah, that's exactly what's happening. We're like 60 days in, Dave. How you feeling? How you feeling?
How you feeling? The question on everybody's lips is, to everyone they talk to, is how you feeling? I feel mostly okay. I would call today a good day. My sleep schedule, sadly, is completely, totally insane, thrown completely out of whack.
Oh, yeah.
I do not know what's happening. I had some work due today, and I set an alarm, and I said, I'm going to get 8 hours of sleep. I'm going to go to sleep at 12, and I'm going to wake up at 8, and I'm going to work for 4 hours.
Ambitious.
And I got into bed at midnight.
Uh-huh. What happened?
And I pulled the covers up to under my chin, and I shut my little eyes.
Cute.
And then I was awake until 3:45 in the morning.
Oh, my gosh. There's nothing worse feeling than not being able to sleep.
No.
It's interesting. You're one of probably 10 people that has shared with me that they've had trouble sleeping. And I also did. Like 2 weeks ago, I pretty much couldn't sleep at all. Like I was having the same thing where I'd lay down, I'd be so tired. 4 a.m. rolls around and I'm like, what the flying fuck? I've gotten a hold of it, been taking my magnesium, but I think it's just a sign of the times, you know?
Oh, I mean, there's just a bunch of, I wouldn't call them all bad, but I would just say that there's an abundance of thoughts running around in all of our little heads as we're trying to go to sleep.
Yeah.
And any amount of distractions or winding down tools are either working or not working in varying degrees. And I gotta say, I don't know if I've come to the end of the line with, I've certainly ran out of, scummy 70s detective movies to watch before bed. That was like maybe 3 weeks ago that I ran out, it just stopped being effective.
Yep.
And now I've been cutting down on drinking. I'm not doing too much crazy stuff before bed, but who is to say what could make this better? But I think nothing within me is going to help. I think it's only, I think the government could help.
I think the government could help. I think the president could help if he knows how, if he ever, picked up a fucking book or something.
If the president and vice president would just, even for a show, even just for a big old show, if they just wore a mask in public and didn't take it off and didn't answer a bunch of questions really stupidly about it, if they just wore a mask
and
this is as much on me as it is on them. I'm also stupid. If I saw the president wearing a mask and he kept it on and he said, if he said, I'm wearing my mask because it's good for me and it's good for you and we should wear a mask, I would say, oh, wow, he's really turning it around.
Yeah, me too. I would buy it. I'd buy the bullshit. I love that he gave some sort of Medal of Honor award to a bunch of 90-year-old veterans and didn't wear a mask. And when asked, why not? He said, the wind was blowing in a direction that even if I spit on them, it wouldn't have hit them. And I was like, this guy is like literally has the same logic that like my little brother did when he was 7.
I was going to say he's got my aunt, my wonderful aunt's logic. She's like about his age and she hates him. So I'm not throwing her under the bus. She doesn't like him at all, but, she just has her own little internal logic. And I think that most people are like that, but I think it's kind of hard to operate on your own timetable and your own set of rules and logic when you are the president of the United States.
Yeah, it's really a shame. Can I tell you a food update?
I want to hear about it all, please.
All right. Well, I'm sleeping, so that's good.
Great.
Still single somehow. I'm kidding. I know exactly how. It's because A, I don't want to date, and B, you're not allowed to touch people. I have a weird update. So I was, as everyone knows, I was vegan for a long time. I was vegan for years and vegan, but would eat eggs. Last year at some point started eating meat and it was feeling good. And this is Dave. One of the most strange things that happened to me, I was cooking a piece of steak.
Uh-huh. Yes.
And I just started crying. I know. And I can't stop.
Oh my God.
Crying when I talk about it. It was so weird. It hit me. It hit me. Like, I always knew the reasons for being vegan or vegetarian, right? I always knew cognitive reasons. I've read every book. I've watched every documentary. I am informed. And I love animals. But I've never had a reaction like that. And I was cooking this piece of steak and I just started crying and I couldn't stop crying and I couldn't eat it. And it's been about a week and a half and I have not been able to eat meat since. I don't know what happened.
Whoa.
I know. It was like a very,
Steve.
I know, it was emotional. I felt sad that I had killed an animal basically so that I could eat it. I felt sad that like, oh, it was living at some point. And then I was like, I don't know. It just hit me in such a bad way that I was like, I don't feel like I can do this.
How have you been feeling physically since you've stopped eating meat a week and a half ago? Because you didn't start eating meat again because you were like, oh man, I wish I could have a burger right now. You did it, right? Because your doctor was like, you need, I suggest you start doing this, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, it was my heart doctor and my acupuncturist. But the truth is, like, you can also supplement by just taking a multivitamin and then eating vegan or vegetarian, however you want. I feel really good after. It feels in alignment with my emotional reaction. Do you know what I mean? So it's like, I feel good. I feel, I'm trying not to define it necessarily, but I definitely have not eaten meat. I feel good. I feel physically very good. I just have to watch my blood pressure. My blood pressure gets really low. So I just have to make sure it's high enough and that's it. But I feel good. I feel, oh God, I feel like I knew the reasons for being vegetarian. I knew them all, but it's never hit me in an emotional way until that happened. And how interesting that it would happen during social isolation where I'm cooking for myself. Like, I can't even tell you how many times I've cooked a steak, almost never, you know? So I think it makes sense, yeah. but it was also like, it felt so bad, Dave. I couldn't stop crying.
Huh. You have dogs. So this theory is going to go totally out the window, but say in a world where you don't have dogs, you're social isolating, you're not around a single living thing. And then the closest thing you can get to being around a living thing is something that used to be alive that you're now cooking and eating.
Terrible.
Probably doesn't feel good.
No.
I totally understand.
Yeah. And I don't think, here's what I will say. Everything in my life is sort of lining up to be more compassionate. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm gentler on myself. I'm gentler on other people. I love my animals and I treat them like my children. And, you know, I don't know. It just, I try not to leave a huge imprint on the world. Like, I drive a Prius and I buy secondhand clothing because it's, you know, everything lines up to being like, hey, this is the next thing. And I have already done it before, but it was so interesting. I would love to hear if any listeners have ever had that experience, because I've never had an emotional response to it. But man, it felt very, it felt like my body was telling me something like from a real place, you know, as hippie as that sounds.
Oh, well, absolutely. No. It totally, look, I mean, hippie or not, and I mean, if the food section of this show has taught us anything over the years, it's that you just have to listen to your body because it is trying to tell you something. I mean, that can be as specific as God, this is really interesting. I'm now thinking of I watched something last night that was incredibly harrowing, and I don't want to talk about it too much, but it's reminding me, like, that you're having an emotional, physical response to something your body is telling you, I don't want to do this anymore. Yeah. Totally great reason not to do something anymore. And last night I was trying to, you know, I couldn't sleep again. I was up from 12 to 3:45 in the morning and I watched Daryl Hammond from SNL, who used to do like President Clinton, has this truly harrowing, awful story of just insane childhood trauma and abuse that he like that he was suppressing for years and years and years. And then he wrote a memoir and then adapted it into a stage show. And then somebody made a documentary about that. And so I watched it, and it's certainly not light viewing. He's a very dark, troubled man, but he had the author, they interviewed the author of the book, The Body Keeps the Score, or Holds the Score. Do you know this book?
Yes. The body, your body keeps score or something.
I think it's the body keeps the score, and it's about, how trauma is stored. And, you know, that's a very, I would say that's a fairly more extreme version than having a physical aversion to eating meat. But I just think, you have to, especially, and I say this just strictly for myself, now that I'm getting older, I do have to listen to my body more. I was, I was on a very good clip of exercising almost sometimes four times a week for like an hour each time. Yeah. And, my back has really been bothering me lately, and the exercising is supposed to help it. So I've just been laying off of it for a couple of days, and I already feel a little bit better. And I think pushing it would have been a mistake. I think pushing forward and continuing to eat meat after you had a full, physical, emotional breakdown while doing it would have been a mistake for you. Yep. A mistake with a hyphen. Sorry. But I think that please don't quit the show.
I love it. I actually am committing to four more seasons after that.
Four more seasons. You heard it here first, guys. We will take any and all sponsors and guests. But that is okay, that is a very significant food update.
It's huge. Yes. Do you have one? Oh, I also have a book.
Go ahead. I didn't want to cut you off.
Oh, you're wonderful. I have a book recommendation that I've been reading. Mm-hmm. It's called Untamed by Glennon Doyle. And she has an entire chapter about burning it all down. And I just was like, oh, we have to recommend this because it's such a good book. An incredible listen. I'm listening on Audible. I'm almost done with it. It's really powerful. It's geared towards women, but I think if anyone listened to it, they'd find a lot of great information. It's like, it's not a self-help book, but it is an incredible book for like coming into your power.
Is it a memoir?
No, it's just like stories and antidotes from her life. I mean, but it's like, it's self-helpy in a way, but like, I just like that she's like saying like, let's not apologize for being us. Do you know what I mean? Like, let's stop apologizing. Like, women are always playing so small, and it's honestly about trusting your inner voice, which I just really liked. And I love that there's a chapter about burning it down. So I was like, this is such a I burn everything wreck.
Oh, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I think now we are on a pretty significant delay. And not only are we on a delay, this is going to sound, the irony to end all ironies. You were just very eloquently, I'm sorry to laugh. You were very eloquently speaking about a passage from the book and how you appreciated it and how it taught women, or you think it is good for women to hear and read because it teaches them. Or it speaks about how they shouldn't be afraid to have more of a voice. And as you were talking about that specifically, your voice was going out and becoming very like digitized and hard to hear and garbled. And the pure irony in that, I think maybe the delay we had has righted itself. And I think we can keep it all in. Or do some light tweaks to it, but I think that your point is totally felt, and I think Untamed by Glennon Doyle.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes. Yeah, I can hear you perfectly. I think we prayed to the gods of Zencastr, and they heard us, and now we can resume as planned.
I thought for a second that maybe Zencastr was trying to silence women, which I was like, that explains it.
Wow. They make this service free during the time of coronavirus, and yet then they shut the women out. We are not just Zencastr is not just for the Joe Rogan crowd. This is for everybody. You know what I'm saying? And also, if any of the companies that sell supplements to Joe on Joe Rogan's show want to sponsor us, that's fine. I won't hate on you either. Bring on the Rogan heads.
Oh my bring gosh. On the supplements. Bring them on.
Bring on InfoWars. We love you.
We love you. Do we want to read any of those emails or do you?
Oh, I do. Yes. Okay. And real quick, since you so eloquently gave a great recommendation, I got to give one. It's a little bit of a no-brainer, but I was even behind the curve on this. The Last Dance, the ESPN documentary about Michael Jordan. It's 10 parts. It's absolutely phenomenal. I mean, anything I could say about it has already been said. I'm in awe of it. It also really brings me back. I've just been thinking a lot about being a white Jewish kid from the suburbs growing up, like in the 90s. And so the Beastie Boys documentary and the Michael Jordan documentary have come out in the last couple of weeks, like concurrently. And it's very triggering is the wrong word because it brings back kind of nice memories, but they just have some shots of the Dream Team, the U.S. Olympic team in 1992. And they show all of these kids with like Dream Team hats and t-shirts greeting Larry Bird and Michael Jordan. And they look, I mean, even though I was 9 at the time, some of them are a little older than me in these shots, Stevie, they look like me. They just look like a little goofy, little dumb boy being like, oh my God, I couldn't love basketball anymore. I love Michael Jordan. I don't know that he has a gambling problem. All I know is that he's the greatest man to ever walk the earth.
I love that. I need to watch it. I haven't watched it yet, but I love that as a recommendation. Also, I think there should be a word for when something triggers you in a nostalgic way. Like, there should be a word for that. Is there?
Can we do a little bit of a workshop?
Yeah, we could workshop it.
Okay, let's see.
Well, if trigger means to bring up something bad, right? And trigger is technically like a gun.
Mm-hmm.
So what is something more gentle that reminds you of childhood?
A water balloon hitting you.
Okay, so it's like a splash.
It's like a splat. Oh, a splash or a splat? A splash. I got splashed. Like
splash. It's like a splash or it's like a flash. Splash or
I mean, you could also say I got ballooned. I got
it's like that thing when you're like you know when you like smell something from your childhood and it just like it's just so gentle, it's like a gentle breeze, it's almost like you got breezed.
Or like a breeze is blowing past you, like you got blown.
Oh. Well, the other day I was walking and I got blown in the middle of the street.
Everybody was looking at me. I was like, don't worry, I'm just remembering something from my childhood. I'm just as I'm being blown. You know what? Let's keep the workshop ongoing. It's an open workshop.
Yeah. Yep. Great idea.
Listeners, you can email us at iburneverythingpod@gmail.com. I am going to just read one of our emails real quick. We've got actually a bunch, so keep them coming and we'll read them all on future episodes. Rebecca says, hello. I started listening to your podcast when Chris Fairbanks was your guest. You guys are really entertaining, so thank you for that. Would you recommend I start from the beginning or can I just start listening in real time? Beck. Beck, to you, I will say thank you for listening. I'm glad Fairbanks brought you in. He's a wonderful man. I would suggest skipping around. I think you could start at the beginning, but we're not telling any sort of linear story. So I think just bop around and read the descriptions and anything that sounds super fun to you. The beginning of this season, we had Noel Wells and Josh Rubin on. They were really amazing. In the past, we've had some pretty wild episodes with people like Aaron McGaffey. Alex Blagg was a great one. Mm-hmm. Jake Wiseman, if you go back in time and listen to Jake Wiseman from several years ago, creator of Comedy Central's
so
Corporate.
So good.
He really tore me a new one on that one. He really goes hard.
He goes hard.
You can dig for some buried treasure and find an episode that with my ex-girlfriend about our relationship that we were in at the time, but I wouldn't suggest that one.
No.
But that one's actually that one's really funny, so maybe actually do listen to that.
Yeah,
one.
She's so funny
and we're pals now. What else? Steve, you got a favorite one?
Probably one of my top favorites is one you already recommended. I really love the Alex Blagg one.
Oh yeah,
I really like the Gabby Dunn episode. And from
oh yeah
Yeah, that one was great. And from this season, I mean, I like the one we just did with Rebecca, and I love Chris Fairbanks, and the Josh Rubin one also. So
yeah, and also, you know, yeah. some of our solo ones with just you and me are fun because they kind of place us in time. Actually, Rebecca, I'll end our comments about this with this. Prior to season wait, are we in season three? Yes. The first two seasons, I will not say that you need to listen to everyone, but we really did reveal a lot about our personal lives. So if you're curious, you don't have to start at the beginning of time, but if you want to see where we were at in 2015, 2016, 2017, check seasons one and two, and don't tell us what you found, because we've been trying to block those memories out.
Yeah, doesn't it almost feel like, for me, like, I tell everyone to start at season three, like the first episode of season three, because for me, it feels a little bit like, it feels like we've let someone read our diary. And I was
absolutely.
Like, oh, man. But that's OK. You know, you live and you learn. And some of those are great.
Yes. And a quick shout out to very recent guest, Rebecca Bolness. She was just a terrific guest. I was talking to her and she said something to the effect of, haha, right after I went on your show talking about how I hate apps and I'm done with them, I matched with somebody and I'm like losing my mind, going crazy talking to them. I like them so much. So I offered to have her do a quick like phone check-in during this outro, but we both agreed it would probably be better to let it lie and see where she's at. You know, in the future, give her a couple of weeks to let that gestate and see what happens. And then also she posted and texted me about her little cousin, who I believe is 20.
Yes.
Who at one point went viral for dancing on TikTok or Vine or something, but is like a big internet star, is a big fan of our show, and couldn't believe to hear that she could hear her cousin on the show, and was like, and was freaking out about it. So if you're listening, thank you. I'm glad you have some new context and that the hosts of a show you like actually know your cousin. So your cousin's great. You're great. I don't actually know what your name is, because your Instagram name, I think, is not your full name. So whoever you are, thanks for listening. And I hope you're having a great quarantine.
Oh, my God.
Stevie, where can people find us?
They can find us anywhere you find podcasts on, and you can rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, and you can email us at iburneverythingpod@gmail.com. And I still don't know our phone number, so if you can do that.
213-458-5236 is our telephone number, and we just got a brand new review on iTunes or on Apple Podcasts. The Steve's Kitchen and Alston shout out really warmed my heart. Love this podcast, and the subject line is Alston. So the story about me getting hit by a car warmed someone's heart. So the fact that I got hit by a car in front of wonderful and still open Steve's Kitchen in Alston, Massachusetts, made somebody's day. So hope at least somebody got something out of that story.
Yeah, a lot more than you did.
Email us. Listen. Keep listening to our show. Skip around if you're behind and you haven't heard them all. And we'll keep coming at you every single week until they let us out of our fucking houses. And then maybe we'll take a break or something. But until then, we got no excuse, guys. We love you. Stevie, I'm coming to your yard to see the dogs sometime soon.
Please.
I miss them and I miss
Come
you.
On over.
And I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Will Himes, and I am a ghostwriter, meaning I write other people's books for them. And I have a podcast called I Will Write Your Book, which are recordings of my meetings with my eccentric clients. Such as, a woman blocked after one sentence of a children's book about her dogs, a romance novelist who dislikes sex, and a man proud of having sampled everything in his local grocery store. This podcast has been described as fully improvised, played by some of the best comedians on the planet Earth. Hey, that's pretty good. That's I Will Write Your Book on Campfire Media.
Campfire.